Well, good morning. Thank you for joining us. As LJ mentioned, sometimes it's hard to walk into a new place. So if this is your first time or one of your first times, we appreciate you doing that. Also, if you're joining us online, thanks for doing that and being with us. So in January 1997, Hope and I went to language school in San Jose, Costa Rica, and not long after that, I got a toothache. And I tried to mask that because I didn't know any dentists. We're in Costa Rica. Well, that doesn't help. The pain doesn't go away. And I thought, I'm going to have to go see, but I don't know. And somebody recommends this guy who's Costa Rican, but he married an American, speaks excellent English. And I met him, and he was pretty insistent. Andy, I need you to come see me. Because the regulation of the dentistry and cleanliness wasn't maybe up to U.S. standards. And there was a concern of infection or transmission of disease. And so, though it would kind of pad his bottom line, he insisted. I come see him and went to see him and got the problem resolved. I say that when it comes to meeting needs, when it comes to finding life, Jesus is an insistent. I want you to come see me. I don't want you to go someplace else because you're not going to get what you're looking for. I want you to come see me. Why is he so insistent on that? That's what I want us to talk about today. So if you got a Bible, if you'd open it to Luke chapter 12, we're going to start in verse 22, and we'll go through verse 48, wrestling with this question. Why does Jesus call us to seek him and him alone with our needs? If you've been with us, we've been working our way through the book of Luke. We know that Luke took it upon himself to write an account of Jesus' life for a guy named Theophilus, probably a newer convert, trying to help him put it all together. We believe the Spirit of God maintained that record for us so that we could know Jesus. And God is revealing himself in the Word. And what we found out about Jesus, he's like no person ever born of a woman. It was the coming together of a woman and the Holy Spirit to birth the Son of God, fully human. Jesus worked as a carpenter for 30 years. And he stepped out into public ministry and began to reveal himself to the world as the Son of God. And that has happened. He has gathered a following, and he has gathered opposition, and now he is headed to Jerusalem to die for the sin of the world. And he's in that process where we pick it up, teaching his disciples that they're ready when he leaves. Verse 22, Jesus said to his disciples, "For this reason I say to you, do not worry about your life as to what you will eat, nor your body as what you will put on." So Jesus is going right. He doesn't want you to worry, and he's going right for the most basic of our needs, food and clothing. Why? For life is more than food and the body more than clothing. And he's going to give us two examples of why we ought to trust him. And the first one is in verse 24. It says, "Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap. They have no storeroom nor barn, and yet God feeds them. How much more valuable you are than the birds." If you weren't with us last week, Jesus told about a parable of a rich man who had a great harvest, nothing wrong with that, but he gathered all his stuff in barns, and he thought, eat, drink, and be merry, gave no thought for God, and God said, your life is going to be demanded of you. So Jesus kind of flips the script, and he talks about a raven who was considered ceremonially unclean, very low standing in the animal kingdom, and God says, he watches out for them, and they don't have barns, and they don't plan, and they don't, but God takes care of them. So here's the question Jesus wants to ask you and me and everyone else. And which one of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his lifespan? Now, translators are mixed on how to translate that last part, can add to his lifespan, or which one of you is also translated can add a single cubit to his height. So imagine you're a basketball player and you're pretty good in middle school, but then you stop growing. And you get in high school and you want to keep growing. And so Jesus says, how much will you grow if you stand in front of the mirror and worry about your lack of height? I mean, will 8 hours of worry give you an inch? How much worrying, if you stand there and look in the mirror, how much is that going to add to your height? That's a rhetorical question. It's not going to help. It's not going to help you accomplish what you want. Worry only takes energy. It only takes life. It doesn't add anything. So Jesus is saying, instead of spending this energy, why not trust me? Because I take care of even a low-standing raven. This point in verse 26, if then you cannot do even a very little thing, like add to your height or add an hour to your life, why do you worry about other matters? If you're not going to be able to pull off a little thing, why are you going to be able to pull off a big thing? Okay, here's one of the challenges of being a preacher. You ready for this? You all ready for this? Sometimes the passage, bang, hits you right in your besetting sin. And that's what's happening this morning. Boy, if there's something that consumes me, it's worry. And there's reasons for that. My parents grew up in the Depression, and they brought that stress in, part of his personality. But bottom line, I want to be in control. And maybe if I worry about it, I can make it happen. Now, did any of you who are married, did you marry somebody opposite of you? Did you do that? Because I did that. I married an optimist. The sky's blue. It's always been blue and always will be blue. And many of the conflicts we've had is, I'm all stressed out. And she's going, Andy, what's the deal? I don't get it. What's the problem here? And doggone it, after 31 years, she's right. You know, I'm learning, finally. But can I tell you a little bit how worries robbed me through the years? So we have two kids. Here's how it went down. Miscarriage, birth of our older son, miscarriage, birth of our younger son. That first miscarriage put me on alert. You can lose a baby. So I did not enjoy the pregnancies. And her pregnancies were not, they were not, once it took, it took. There was no sign that we were going to lose the baby. But I worried, and I didn't enjoy it, because what if? I'm pretty sure my worry didn't help the health of her pregnancy. I'm pretty sure of that. I lost, because I wouldn't trust, and I worried. Second one, church in Arizona, before we moved here, wasn't going well. Got the lead on the job at Lincoln Berean, and the guy who recruited me, Mark Kramer, said, look, here's how this is going to go. We're going to bring you in. We get to know one another. If we ask you back a second time, we're serious about you. Don't come unless you're serious about us. So I went, got asked back a second time. It went pretty well. Then he said, here's how it's going to go. This is Sunday. Monday night, we're going to meet. We're going to talk about it. We're going to pray. And the next Monday, we're going to make a decision. So I got 8 days before that. And really, I have reason to think this has gone pretty well. They invited me back a second time. Thought the interview went well. But what did I do those 8 days? What do you think I did? I worried. Do you think that helped me get the job? No, it just robbed energy. See, Jesus is telling this not because I need all the focus on me, because when you seek to get food and clothes and any other needs, you take that on yourself, you worry, and all it does is it robs you of energy. So Jesus said, listen, I consider the raven, low-standing bird. I take care, no barn, no nothing. I take care of the raven. Second example, verse 27, consider the lilies. We're going to talk about clothes now, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, but I tell you, not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass and the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, how much more will he clothe you, you men of little faith? This is an argument with the raven and both the grass from lesser to greater. If God's going to take care of these little things, how much more of you who has more value? Therefore, verse 29, and do not seek what you will eat and what you will drink, and do not keep worrying. The word there is like a ship tossed in the sea. You think you're in control, you've got to take care of these things, you're tossed about. For all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek, but your Father knows that you need these things. That's a tough concept to get. Food, clothes, maybe it's stature, maybe it's prestige, maybe it's being getting married, maybe it's having a child, maybe all these things we can worry about only robs us of life, and we can't control them. Can I tell you about the day my childhood changed? I don't know my exact age. I was maybe 11 when my dad got home early from work. "What are you doing home early?" my mom asked. "I got let go today." I heard that. I didn't understand a lot about economics, but I thought, oh, we got one source of income. And all of a sudden, my antenna goes up. My dad has trouble keeping a job because he can't get along with his boss. I become very aware of that. And I'm trying to control, have enough income as a family, and hoping we don't have to move. And we moved after my eighth grade year, and we moved after my junior year in high school. You want to know how much that controlled me? I can go back 50 years, 1972 to 1977. In that time period, my dad had three jobs. I can give you the name of every one of those bosses. Bob Southern in Detroit, first job in Chicago. John Machazek, second job, Elmer Labadie. People, that's 50 years ago. Those are my dad's bosses. Why do I know those names? Because I was so in tune. I was so worried. I was so aware of the conflict, and I was worried. And you know what? I couldn't do anything about it, and it changed the trajectory of my childhood. I didn't know any better. I didn't know Christ. I was 11 years old. But those of us who know, Jesus is saying, don't go that way. What will you do instead? But seek his kingdom. What's his kingdom? It's his rule. It's his authority. Seek that in your life, turning everything over to him, his direction, his rule. And these things will be added to you. Verse 32, do not be afraid. Have we heard that before? God's number one command to his people from Genesis to Revelation, all the way through the Bible, clearly, without question, is do not be afraid. Fear not. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. In light of that, in light of the fact that Jesus is going to meet these needs, do this. Sell your possessions and give to charity. Make for yourselves money belts which do not wear out. An unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes nor moth destroys. Give yourself to something that will last. For where your treasure is, where you put your money, where you put your time, where you put your affection, your heart will be also. You will follow that. And Jesus said, you put that into money, clothes, whatever, you're going to be controlled by those things. And they'll ruin you. Instead, seek me, my kingdom, my rule. As a byproduct of that, I will give you life. So we ask this question, why does Jesus call us to seek him with our needs? Here's what I'd say. Jesus calls us to seek him with our needs to free us to live for his life-giving direction. Jesus said, come to me. Remember the dentist in Costa Rica? Come to me with your sword to know, with all our needs, to free us to live for his life-giving direction. Recently, I read a longer-term article on online gambling and what a problem it's become, especially with young men. But if I could sum up the article in this, it's this synopsis. Hey, the casinos or the bookies whoever is running this thing, they need to make a profit to stay in business. So to the gamblers, they're going to take more than they give. Does that make sense? You don't have to have an MBA in economics there to understand that. That's what Jesus is saying. When you look for life in food and clothing or anything else, look, culture, the world, it takes more than it gives. Kind of like the online gambling thing. They're taking from you. And that's what Jesus said is, worry's doing it. It's taking from us. It's taking life. And I want you to cast that off and come to me and allow me to give you life, knowing I have control of these other things. So in verse 35, there's a transition. And the connection is Jesus has talked about living for his kingdom. His kingdom is his rule and his authority. And we experience that in part right now. You experience it on a personal level. We see it on some levels in our culture. We see it in churches. We see it in different places. But we don't see it in full. And we won't see Jesus' rule. We won't see his authority in full until he comes back. And that's what Jesus is going to talk about here starting in verse 35. And he's going to give three calls to be ready. Now here's what Scripture tells us. Our view is we need to be ready because Jesus can come back at any time. And we need to be prepared that Jesus might return, might be 1,000 years away. We live that tension. Jesus is going to focus on the one part that says, be ready. It could happen at any time. Three calls of it. Ready? Here we go. Verse 35, be dressed in readiness. So people in the old days wore a tunic when they went to battle or they played in competition. They rolled that up. Be ready in your dress to move. And keep your lamps lit. That's a metaphor for stay awake. Why? Be like men who are waiting for their master when he returns from the wedding feast, so they may immediately open the door to him when he comes and knocks. When he shows up, they want to be ready. You don't want to be shaken off the cobwebs. He wants you to be ready. Second call, verse 37. Blessed are those slaves whom the master will find on the alert when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will gird himself to serve and have them recline at the table and will come up and wait on them. So the master who shows up with people ready, he's going to wait on them. Whether he comes in the second watch or even the third and finds them, blessed are those slaves. Third call to be ready. But be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have allowed his house to be broken into. That makes sense. You too, be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect. Man, he could show up today. Are you going to be embarrassed? Are you going to, there's stuff I got to do? Or are we ready when he shows up? Well, this has raised questions for Peter. In verse 41, he says, Lord, are you addressing this parable to us or everyone else as well? But Jesus doesn't answer that question. He continues on the theme. Verse 42, who then is faithful and sensible steward whom his master will put in charge of his servants to give them their rations at the proper time? Jesus said, I am judging how you do on earth when you're ready to show up to put you into a place of greater leadership. Blessed is the slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will be put in charge of all his possessions. Jesus said, I find you faithful on earth. I'll put you faithful in something greater. Will we be ready if Jesus were to show up today? So I mentioned junior year in high school, March of junior year, we move into a newer subdivision in North Houston. They've got a pool, so I apply for a lifeguard job, and I am the last hire. I think there's about 8 of us, a shift leader, and then 3, 4 on a shift leader, and 3 guards. Anyway, the 8 of us are together, and we meet with Mr. Tull, who's going to be our boss. He's the manager of the club, and then up above him is the offices of the developer, and this guy has developed properties all over North Houston, probably one of the wealthier men in the Houston area, wealthier men in Houston. Anyway, Mr. Tull says, hey, you're going to be on 45 minutes. You got a 15-minute break. I want you to get down and check the bathrooms before you go on break. I want to keep clean bathrooms. So, you know, we had a mixture of boys and girls on the team, so you go in and do that. So, okay, that's what he wants. That's what I do. I'm about 3 weeks into my shift. I'm in the bathroom, and people, I am mopping away, and I'm doing a fine job with the mop, in case you were wondering. I'm mopping away, and the door opens, and who walks in? Mr. Tull walks in, and he's accompanied by his boss, the developer of the subdivision, developer of all the property in Houston, and they're looking at something in the bathroom, and what does Mr. Tull see? Andy on the mop, doing a great job. Okay, my name with Mr. Tull changed at that point. I went from Andy to Handy Andy. Handy Andy is good with that mop, don't you know? So the summer finishes, and Handy Andy goes to Mr. Tull and says, hey, do you have any work available during the school year? Well, Handy Andy, you've showed yourself to be an excellent worker. I need someone who will, in Houston, you left water in the pool year-round. I need somebody that will vacuum the pool on a weekly basis. Well, Mr. Tull, I've got swim practice, and this is Handy Andy, he says. Handy Andy, you just get it. You set your hours. You just get it done. What happened? I was ready when he came in. I had the mop a-going, people. And Mr. Tall. So then Christmas break comes and they host parties. And he's got his staff. And I said, Mr. Tall, I'm just checking. Are you full? He said, Handy Andy, I am full, but you're a good worker. I'll find a spot for you. So what's my point? I was ready. And he rewarded me. And I go in after my freshman Christmas break and my freshman year in college, I came back. He had worked for me again. This is what Jesus is saying. Be ready. If I find you faithful, I've got more for you. If I don't, well, that's what we find out in verses 45 to 48. We've had three calls to be ready. In verses 45 to 48, we'll find a contrast with someone who wasn't. But if that slave says in his heart, my master will be a long time in coming, so I'm just not going to live for the fact that he could return at any moment, and begins to beat the slaves, both men and women, and to eat and drink and get drunk, the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. And that slave who knew his master's will and did not get ready or act in accord with the will receive many lashes. But the one who did not know it and committed deeds worthy of flogging will receive but few. From everyone who has been given much, much will be required, and to whom they have entrusted much, of him they will ask all the more. There'll be judgment based on revelation and understanding, but the bigger picture is, if God comes back and finds us not ready, just like there was blessing for being ready, there will be consequences for not being. What can distract us? A focus on our needs. A focus on food or clothing or prestige or power or position or getting this or that in culture. And Jesus says, whatever that is, I want you to roll that over on me. Seek my rule, my authority, my direction in your life. Let me give you life and allow me to care for that. So practically, what does living for the kingdom mean? It means living for that which matters to God. And the first thing that matters to God is him and his word. And you know, even this afternoon, if you have time, to come and worship God. Now, if you can't make it, there's other ways to worship God. But one, to focus on him. Two, it's an investment in people. I'm going to see what I can do to move God's rule, move his authority in other people's lives. What can I do to move that process forward? There's a concern for those who are suffering, who are hurting, who are vulnerable, taking care of those people because they're near and dear to God's heart. See, God, his word, and people are eternal. And our investment needs to be in his kingdom, his rule, moving that forward, trusting him to meet our basic needs. Now, every time I do a sermon, I run it by people. And, you know, one of his friends told me, Andy, this can almost sound like God's utilitarian. He needs us to complete his purposes. Okay, let me dispel that. He doesn't. God's sovereign. He can do what he wants. And just three verses from the Old Testament. God is speaking to Israel about offering their sacrifice, and they were to offer an animal to him. But God kind of interjects in there, you know, I don't need what you have to offer. Here's what he says, Psalm 50. You know, so they're offering a sacrifice to him. And God says, look, for every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird of the mountains and everything that moves in the field is mine. So I own it all. Look. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine and all it contains. Don't think I'm asking for your sacrifice because I need something from you. I'm perfectly capable of meeting my needs. I'm asking for you for your own good. Because when you worry, all you do is expend energy. When you roll those things over on me and trust me and give yourself to my life-giving direction, I can give you life you can't find in the world. See, the world doesn't offer a good value. We invest more than we get. Anybody ever been used car shopping? Anybody ever been used car shopping? Does anybody like that process? Anybody like the process? No? No one likes the process? Carol, you like the process? No. Okay, there you don't. Okay, I'll speak for me, but when I go used car shopping, here's what I'm fearful of. I'm not going to get good value. I'm going to give, we've saved money, we've worked, we've done, I'm going to give this amount of money, and I'm not going to get equal in return. That's what culture does when it comes to life. It tells you to food, clothes, job, house, whatever. You don't get equal value. You give more than you get. Now, let's say you're used car shopping, and you're in this process, and you're stressed out, and somebody comes along and says, I've got a car for you. Then what? You can stop with the process, can't you? You can stop fretting about being taken for lesser value because your need has been met. Do you understand, for the sake of illustration, that's what Jesus has done? I've given you the car. You can stop shopping. I'm the one who will meet your need. You can stop shopping out there to get your needs met. I'm the one that does that. One more time, let me ask and answer a question. Why does Jesus call us to seek him with our needs? Calls us to seek him with our needs to free us, to live for his life-giving direction. Would you pray with me? Our Father in heaven, we're grateful that you call us to seek your kingdom. And it's easy to worry. Lord, it's what about food? What about clothing? You went to the most basic of needs, but we can go from there. Worry is just, there's an inexhaustible list. Lord, would you bring this home? We are people prone to worry. That's because we think we're in control. We think we're in charge. Would you free us from that? That you're in charge and you're calling us to roll that stuff on you. And instead to live for your kingdom, your rule, your authority in our life, in the lives of people around us. We pray this in your name. Amen.